and welcome to the Blind Handyman Show, recorded at the Little Ranch House on Southwood Drive, right here in good old Lufkin, Texas, show number 79 on the 10th of May, 2004. Good to have you along. For the next hour, we're going to be talking about building, repairing, and maintaining, all designed, of course, with blind in mind. Here are the hosts for the Blind Handyman. Ladies and gentlemen, here he is, Don Patterson.
Well, Thomas, what's going on today?
Not a whole lot. It's good to have you with us.
Well, yeah, I'm surviving.
Well, good. I'm glad to hear that. Don Shaw, hi.
Any words of wisdom for us today, Mr. Tom?
No.
No, it's not that.
My name is Tom, though. You did tell everybody who I was. I'm Tom Houston. And ladies and gentlemen, right now, let me pause for a minute. Let me stop the music. Bring it back up. Here he is, the creator and producer of the Blind Handyman, is my buddy Phil Parr. Hey,
oh, man.
There we go.
I had a wonderful time in. What is that plugged into?
Oh,
I see. I had a wonderful time in. That's on the wrong thing. There. I had a wonderful time in. Where'd I go?
Katy, Texas.
Katy, Texas.
Katy, yeah.
Katy, Robert
Harrington. Roger Clemens country.
Is that where Roger Clemens was born?
That's where he lives.
The Katy really? Rocket, they call it.
That's right.
The Katy Rocket.
That's 6-0, I might add.
Is he?
Yes,
what
sir.
A deal.
An old man. I thought, why in hell would they want him? He's an old man. But he says the best picture they got, I guess, huh?
So far.
He's the real deal. Anyway,
Roger
I'm
Clemens.
Sorry.
Is this going to be his last year?
I don't know. You know, I bet if he has a real good year, I bet he'll be back next year. I would almost bet it.
What do they pay a guy like him, you think?
What was his deal, Pat? Do you know?
I don't really know.
It was Pettit that got the big money, I think.
Pettit got the big money. And see, Clemens was going to retire from the Yankees anyway.
Yeah.
And then Houston. So I think he got a one-year.
Just a little one-year deal.
And I'm sure it was pretty sizable.
Pettit had Houston ties, so he wanted to come back to Houston and pitch. And then he talked Roger into coming out of retirement and pitching with him since they were on the Yankees together.
If they go to the pennant, if they were to get a World Series shot, I think he might hang it up if he did good. If they come close, really close, and he thinks he's got one more year. I think he'd love to go out with the World Series.
Wouldn't it be nice?
Yeah, no kidding.
Well, they're not going to get a World Series win.
Not likely.
They used to say that. You know, I can remember when I was working in Birmingham back years ago on the phone, a telephone job of all things, and people were saying the same exact thing about Atlanta. And look how many championships.
Yeah.
And how many World Series they've been in
since
then.
Yeah, but Ted Turner's willing to spend money, isn't he?
Well.
And our guy, Drayton McLean.
I kind of like him.
You do?
Kind of like him, yeah.
Well,
I kind of like him.
His
market size, you know, it's bigger than Atlanta, I have to admit.
He's kind of a cheapo, isn't he?
Is it bigger than Atlanta with our market?
No, I
know Houston's bigger, but is our market bigger?
I have no idea.
Well, we're drawing good crowds this year, you know, but there again, that you just get a winning team, you know. I mean, we've had, several 40,000 and plus crowds this year, which is good.
Uh-huh.
Steady diet of that.
Is that right?
Yeah.
That's,
you know, just plain and simple because Houston won't tolerate anything but a winner. Now, other towns like Chicago and New York, they'll support losers even.
Well,
Houston,
and Boston. Boston always has good attendance,
don't
they?
Yeah, you start fading in Houston and your attendance just goes to pop.
Might be out of there.
Yeah.
Well, it's hot down there. You know, it takes a lot of effort to go to the ball game in the summer because it's so hot. It's just easy, I guess, to stay home.
I've heard that tourism in Houston is up like crazy due to Minute Maid Park, the Astros. Yeah. That's part of it. They've got a new football field also. And, of course, it doesn't hurt that the All-Star game is going to be down there this year.
And the Super Bowl was
already
held.
And the Super Bowl was already held.
Light rail train running.
Exactly.
When it's not crashing.
When it's not hitting cars down there. They don't know how to do that.
They had 8 or 9 wrecks already, I think.
Oh, they had. Well, see it. I didn't think there's one. You know, they just, cowboys, they just pull out in front of anybody and make a difference.
Turn left up here, honey bun.
It's Houston. Just drive like nuts down there. You know, it's hit or get hit in Houston, Texas, I'll tell you that. We went through there Saturday. It wasn't bad. The old Beltway, The Beltway...
Was it early? It must have been late Saturday if you were going to do
a
game.
It was... we left here about noon.
Oh, okay.
So we hit the Beltway about 2 o'clock. And it's pretty crowded. But, Bob, I'll tell you, those folks with their easy tags, they don't slow down one. Mm-hmm. They
roll on through. It's amazing
how they. And they raised it to $1.25, by the way, now.
Yeah, and you know, they've opened up a new toll road that the e-tag is the only thing you can use. No money.
Really?
Yeah, so easy tag.
I wonder what they do with somebody. What do they do if a guy just flings himself through there?
I asked Luann the same thing, and she said, for the first 30 days, they warn people, and they're going to fine folks after that.
They read their license number,
and they're going to fine you if you go through.
Years ago, I can remember back when I lived in Houston, I was down there all the time. On Saturday mornings was the very best time to be on the streets in Houston, Texas, because everybody had left town. They were going away for the weekend.
Yeah. So you could just,
just get out, and you had the run of the highway, buddy.
This was Saturday afternoon, but it's not bad. I just can't. It just makes me nervous. I can't handle it, but I took a Xanax and we did the Beltway.
I guarantee you one thing: this little town gets trafficy at 4:30 and 5:00.
It does.
At times it gets busy.
And
well, of course we're the county seat, so we've got all the stores.
Right.
And so that's why we get all the traffic, I guess.
All right.
Have you got email, Tommy?
List mail. You might call it. Yes. Here's one on water damage and mold that maybe we can help this fellow out. He says, "Hi all. We discovered that we had a couple of leaks under the kitchen sink.
Oh, yes. Not good.
Unfortunately, we discovered them after they seeped water for quite a while. Now there's mold all over the place under there. I've torn out the floor of the area under the sink.
Good.
I mean the floor of the cabinet, not the floor of the house. I have begun ripping out the drywall that is moldy. It has become more of a project than I am than I'm up to. My questions first: do we need to remove all the material that has molded? That's the first question.
Yes.
And secondly, what do we do about moldy wall studs? Thanks in advance, Ralph."
I try to clean those studs.
Bleach
those studs. And it's under the sink. Tear out the drywall and put a piece of plywood back there.
Or cheap paneling,
anything. Nobody's going to see it.
But if you're going to paint, too, when you get those studs cleaned off with bleach, you know, they make mold paint that is designed to paint over. It's like has a mildew or a real kill, something in it like that. They call it Sears is one place I know that you can buy it. It's just your latex paint, and it has
it won't let any new mold or anything
come through. If you're already torn your sheetrock out anyway, you might clean those studs and then paint them.
Yeah, that'd be a good idea.
Just for grins, you know.
Yeah, just find get a piece of quarter-inch plywood or thin paneling or something and cut out around where the pipes go. And stick it up in there. Nobody's going to see it anyway. It's not going to make any difference.
And once it's cleaned, I'd leave the whole thing open for a few days, a week or so, and just let everything dry out really well before you.
Yeah, if it's summertime and you can do that, you know, of course you want to watch out for getting vermin in your house. every fall I go look and make sure that those little collars are slipped up there tight so that. No guy can come down the wall and get in my house. I don't want them in my. I've never had a rat in this house, and I never intend to. I've had mice in the North Street house, but I never have had anything in this house, and I'm not going to because dogs are useless. They don't give a damn. You know?
They really don't. They don't care.
They don't care. It didn't make any difference. Dogs. They did. They'd let them eat out of the same bowl. It'd make any difference.
Yeah, they really don't care.
Charlie would bark a little bit. Frankie would. Frankie just, you know, she didn't care. It's anything.
Stretch out and recline on
that
couch.
Oh, man. She would. We've had rats, but we've never had any rats in here. Live in the woods, you're going to have rats. You're going to have them.
Yeah.
If you got woods around you. You wait till next fall, big boy, and you'll have some rats. You may not get them in the house, but you'll see some. If you live in the woods, you're going to
live in by the
and
forest.
Rats and blind folks don't get along well.
No. Anyway. There are snakes and blind folks. There was some discussion on this week about snakes.
Even deaf people and blind folks have a hard time.
Oh, my goodness, snakes now. You don't have to be blind to be afraid of a snake, I guarantee.
That's what I hear.
Here's another email. It says, "Help, please."
Help.
And it says, "Hi. Well, today I had to saw a 4x4 panel for my bathroom. My wife doesn't have the strength to saw, but she is sighted. Well, what I need is some ideas on how to saw a straight line. Now, the measurement was 3'2" from the 4-foot panel. When I was sawing, I was doing good until about a foot into the job. Is there something I can put together that will guide me to cut straight, Andy.
Patterson, this is your expertise in these saw guides.
Well, so. I have a saw guide. I assume he may be using a manual saw because he said his wife didn't have the strength.
Yeah, it sounds like it.
And so the best way to do this, especially is if you... It's you know where I mean you have maybe her vision or somebody's with vision, but anyway, either get you a 1x4 or like Phil has always talked about a piece of metal,
flat piece of angle iron, man.
And get
Works.
You two C yep. clamps and clamp maybe back from the edge a little bit so you can start your saw and go in about 6 inches. Then you might have to move one of the C clamps back out to where you sawed. But you'll have, if you had a flat piece or angle iron, any kind of metal, it'll hold you a straight edge. I mean, I've got plenty of pretty good vision, and I do that all the time. I use a guide or take yeah. you can even do it better than that if you're not afraid of a nail hole. Nail your board to it. You know, if you have a workbench and then just make your mark.
And go along your board. Just slide
just
your saw.
Yeah, nail you a 1x4 onto your paneling, and that'll get you a perfect straight line.
And take some, if you're worried about getting across, take some WD-40 and spray on the blade of the saw and spray on the metal so that you can slide. So that you can slide along that metal and just go easy, real slow. And, man, I've got a 5-foot piece of angle iron I wouldn't take for it. It's a,
And I don't know if he said he was using paneling, cutting paneling or a panel out of, like, plywood or something. But if it was paneling and it's not real thick, you know, there's also, like, if you have your straight edge there, you can use, like, a knife.
Almost cut it.
Yeah,
yes, it will.
You can get, a linoleum knife. They're real sharp. You have to be careful. Yeah. But you just get some, and it's and then you can kind of bend the board and break it. So whatever your pleasure is, but I'd either nail or clamp my straight edge on there.
Yep.
And just go down the straight edge. You got to have a straight edge to keep. I mean, there's no way you're going to do it trying to freehand.
No way freehand.
There's no way in the world you're going to do it. Bring it by the house. We'll run it across the table saw.
Yeah, that'd be quick, wouldn't it?
Yeah. Okay. Here's one that says, I have a kitchen sink that has some damage to the porcelain. My daughter lost her grip on a heavy cast iron pot, and it chipped away the porcelain in a few spots. I've heard that these can be repaired by someone coming out to your house and adding a new coat of porcelain to the sink. Has anyone had this done, and is it expensive?
No and yes.
Yeah, you sort of have, haven't
yes
you?
And
back
no.
on
Actually,
Allendale.
When I was remodeling a bathroom, and I debated whether keeping the old cast iron or porcelain type tub or putting in a new one, I opted to put in a new one. There was a man that there's people all over everywhere that do this type of work, and it's like a bathtub or sink restoration. The thing of it changed my mind about it is the cost was about the same as to do the tub. I could have actually it was a little more to have the man come out and do it, but the guarantee is what got me. He said actually they wouldn't for about they figured it would be good for about 3 years and then it, and so for a tub a sink I might go for that. But yes, you could get them to come out, but I imagine it's going to be pretty expensive for this tub. We were talking like $800 to redo a bathtub. So if that gives you an idea of how big your sink is,
Before sink, it may be time to replace that. Might
yeah,
be
I think it would be as easy to
replace
unless you're just fond of that sink.
Unless you're fond of that sink, because an aluminum sink will just sit right down in that hole.
Oh yeah,
and tie right onto the faucets, and it'll be easy to clean. Of course, that porcelain is going to be heavy to get out of there, but
porcelain sink's going to be heavy. But no, that
it is.
But then you can buy these new like PVC or plastic sink, fiberglass sinks that are just really neat, kind of stain resistant, chip resistant.
Yeah. They don't even make porcelain sinks anymore, do they?
You have to hunt for them. You can get them.
I bet you do have to hunt for them.
But you can. But they're kind of a.
So they wanted $800 to re-porcelain a tub with a 3-year guarantee on it,
mm-hmm.
huh?
To redo, to refinish the tub.
That really seems high for that short of a warranty.
Well, actually, I think they would have done the tub. For like $500 and something, but then I wanted the splash back, the sides, so you get the shower enclosure too, and to get it to match. It was astronomical. I thought.
Yeah, even five though for 3 years is.
So you just bought a new tub.
I just bought a new tub.
And that was a major problem.
Putting the new one in wasn't as bad as getting the old one out.
We heard that story the other day.
We talked about that one.
You know what stories? I redid show 19 this week. We had some problems with it. And so I redid show 19, and there you are telling the story of this little guy out front hefting up your bathtub. Sliding into the truck.
That
funny
was back on 19.
That was show 19.
It took Shawboy and I and somebody else to get it out.
Just one guy.
This one little bitty guy came and
I refurbished that show, so we're going to send that in. So those of you who have missed show 19, it is. I didn't get quite all the distortion out, but it plays.
It will be in the archives.
It plays.
Soon.
It'll be in the archives.
We hope.
Coming to a computer near you.
Yeah.
Okay.
Show 19.
A quickie question here on extension cords. It says we're told to never run an appliance long term on an extension cord because the cord will overheat and maybe cause a fire.
Maybe.
Well, if one uses a heavy enough gauge cord with heavy enough insulation, can one not use an extension cord? Can someone explain why we cannot? That is, with the heavy gauge and insulation. What am I overlooking here, Charles?
You could run it forever if you had a, you know, heavy enough cord.
Good heavy cord.
I would think
appliance like a mixer would be fine. But what'll overheat a cord is something that heats, a toaster oven, a coffee pot, or something, because the way they heat is run electricity through that coil, and that coil resists, and so they naturally will overheat an extension cord. But just a coffee pot or something like that. But a mixer or a blender or a food processor, run it on an extension cord the rest of your life, you know?
Yeah, I think, you know, there again, you talk about heat, like a dryer, an electric dryer, you wouldn't want to go a long, long ways. But, I mean, if you had a heavy enough cord, you could go.
How far would
you have to go?
You could go anywhere. How far does he want to go?
I mean, most of the time, you have a plug closer than 20 feet.
So, you know, if you don't have a plug closer than 20 feet, maybe you need to put in a plug.
Yeah.
Outlet time.
Put in an outlet time. Yeah. Cut a hole in the wall and put in an outlet.
And I've run some air conditioners. They're another pain, you know, and they draw a lot of amps when they first come on. That's like the deal. But I've run one off of a 220, I mean, a heavy-duty wire for forever.
They make a heavy, if you're running something off 220, they make a big, for $20, a little old 6 or 8 foot cord that is really thick.
Yeah.
As big as your arm, damn near. All right, I hear music in the background, which means we're going to take a break and do our guest's name today is
Roger Hink.
Roger what?
Roger Hink will be our guest.
Roger
for
Hink
today.
Will be our guest in just a minute. Back with more of the exciting Blind Handyman Show. Hang on. The Blind Handyman Show is blind people have as many plumbing problems and household repairs to do as sighted people do, but we can't do them exactly the same way sighted people do, so we need some input from other blind people to find out how they do household repairs, and so we formed this Blind Handyman, and we got a list going. And as far as Blind Like Me is concerned, we want to use it as an educational tool. As I remember being a young adult, a young person, and thinking, well, how am I going to? I want a nice house and kids and a good job, but how am I going to do that? And I had no idea. And I think the Blind Like Me show demonstrates the fact that it can be done even if you are blind. That's not a handicap. It can be done.
If you would like to be a guest on either show, or you can suggest someone as a guest, email us at blindhandyman@hotmail.com or blindlikeme@txucom.net.
Well, so far, it's been a labor of love.
This is the Blind Handyman. Be sure and tell a friend about the program and email us often from blindhandyman@hotmail.com. Now, here's more of the show with Don Shaw.
All right. Our guest we're going to visit with for a little while today is Roger Hink. And Roger is going to talk to us today about miniature horses. Yeah.
And you knew we were all going to do that silly sound effect, Roger.
We knew that was coming up.
I guess you knew that was coming, didn't you? Where are you located?
Well, we're located halfway between Portland and Seattle on I-5, and a lot of people might recognize us from Mount St. Helens, which blew its top about 24 years ago.
Well, it did, didn't it, huh? It really blew its top.
Yeah, and that was this month also.
So 24 years ago, huh?
Washington State. Yeah.
Washington State.
And actually that benefited us in terms of our, we have 4 acres, and prior to Mount St. Helens blowing up, we have clay soil, so we were bringing in stuff to try and have a good garden. Well, after Mount St. Helens dropped a couple inches of ash all over our 4 acres, we tilled that in, and we've had great gardens ever since.
Wow. Yeah, it's amazing. There's some good comes of everything, isn't that
That's
true?
Right. That's right.
That's true. Some good. Some folks made money off the 9/11 tragedy.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know. And what is your level of vision, sir?
I've been totally blind now for probably 20 years.
Really? So you had some vision at one time?
Yeah. Yes, I did, yes. And I taught school until I retired about 6 years ago. I taught elementary, and then for the last half of my career, I taught high school special education. So that was a good activity to be involved with.
You continued doing this teaching school after you lost your eyesight. Is that what you did before you?
Yeah,
went blind?
I was partially sighted all of my life. Retrolateral fibroplasia.
Yeah.
You know, too
yeah.
much oxygen in the incubator, that kind of stuff.
Yeah, that's me.
And so I taught both partially sighted, and then when I lost all of my sight, I continued teaching, and. You know, did well with that.
Yeah.
I was fortunate to have really, really good people to work with. And that was in a little school district south of us in Winlock, Washington.
And you stayed there for many, many years.
Yes, yeah. And then one day in 1989, people have asked me, well, how did you ever, you know, get a miniature horse? And,
yeah.
you know, I never could really figure out what the reason was we got a miniature horse. So I coined the term equinus aquarius virus.
Equinus aquarius virus. I love it. It's good.
It's good.
This virus came in, and it said, you know, you should get a miniature horse for a pet.
And
at that time, the only miniature horse that I even knew of was had been an article in National Geographic. And it was about a lady in Thousand Oaks, California, and she had this miniature horse. And because she had the miniature horse, all the neighbors were upset because, as you know, that's livestock. That's not a pet.
Yeah, that's not a pet.
So that was the only one that I knew of. And it just so happened that a gal that was working for me as a teacher's aide, she says, well, my dad heard an ad on the radio for a miniature horse. And that's where it started. We got the one miniature horse. And then we somehow found out that there was going to be a show, and we got to see another miniature horse. And then the one we bought for like $300.
Mm-hmm.
But the first one that we saw that was, you know, a registered miniature horse, I was petting it. I kneeled down, I was petting this horse, and I said, and the same question a lot of people ask, well, how much will this horse cost?
Yeah.
And, of course, you have to know that my frame of reference from growing up was that if you had a pet dog, it was you didn't buy a dog. You just had a pet dog. You
yeah, nobody bought dogs.
From my frame of reference, that is, we weren't into, you know, purebreds or anything like that.
Yeah.
So the lady says, well, that'd be $1,500. And my hand came off of that horse like it was on a hot stove.
Like it was stuck, yeah. Like it had stung you. I bet
wow.
It did. So, and that, this was before you owned one.
That was before we owned one, but then when we found the one for $300, we thought, well, we can't handle this $1,500 stuff, but we could, $300, well, go ahead, we'll do that. I mean, you know, that I never in my life dreamed I would pay that much money for a pet, but little did I know that that was just openers, that then we were going to, then we saw that they could pull a cart, and my wife said, wow, wouldn't that be neat if we could get one that was bomb-proof, that was, you know, it didn't spook at anything, and you could just drive it and just, oh, wouldn't that be, that'd just be great.
Yeah.
Well, so we did that. Well, and then, of course, then that led to, gee, the babies, they're so cute.
Mm.
They're just a little adorable. Because when they're born, they only weigh about 20 pounds.
Oh,
really?
In fact, that's one of my jobs is when they're born, I go out and I pick them up. So they get, you know, and you touch them all over so that they're totally used to people, so they're socialized.
Okay.
And I'm sure you've probably heard the old story about, you know, if you would, a friend of mine keeps telling me now, if you just keep doing that.
That was my next thought, if you did it every day.
That's right.
You
and
know.
And then you'd be lifting the Clydesdale, you know.
Have you tried that? Have you tried that?
Well, they get up to, 200 pounds, 250 pounds.
Mm-hmm.
And I suppose for those people that don't know, I should start off by explaining the horses that we're dealing with when we say a miniature horse, so that those folks that don't know, just go up to your kitchen counter, and that's how tall the tallest miniature horse would be. And that now
okay.
That's to the last hair of their mane. So you could say it's like up, you know, up to their shoulder, their back, that kind of thing.
Yeah, so yeah. 4 feet.
So, Roger, one
wow.
quick question. Is this like a breed? Are you calling it, a miniature horse, or are there several breeds of miniature horses?
Now, that's a very excellent question. The 34 inches, which, again, is your kitchen counter,
right.
34 inches and under is considered a miniature horse. Now, the proper name is American Miniature Horse.
Okay.
And now we've gotten over it, but a lot of people, you know, get slightly perturbed if you say, oh, look at the pony.
Yeah, the Shetland,
oh,
they're thinking
of.
Oh,
it's not a pony. Yeah. And the reason it's not a pony is because you've spent thousands of dollars for this little animal.
Right.
And it's a registered American Miniature Horse.
Registered okay. American yeah. Miniature Horse. We'll try to remember
American
that.
Miniature Horse. Now, the origin of miniature horses, a lot of people say, well, they must have come from Shetland ponies. And the truth is that when you look back and you say, well, how are you going to get a smaller and a smaller horse? Well, of course, it's only logical that they would relate back to taller horses, and then they were selectively bred down.
Yes.
But there's a man in South America that bred a line where he was taking horses and just taking smaller horses and breeding down smaller. And that's the goal, of course, miniature horses. You have a small horse. Well, his name was Falabella. So there's the Falabella line out of Argentina. And in the United States, believe it or not, the miniature horses were used in coal mines, like in Virginia, West Virginia, the East Coast. Because they would be going after a small vein of coal, and you think, you know, this is a miniature horse, he's really small, they've got to be really weak. No. They can. I'm good sized. I weigh around 200 pounds, and they could pull me in a cart, no problem.
No problem.
We have an Amish replica wagon that's a solid oak wagon. And,
how neat.
We have two of them that pull us around in the wagon, and we do parades and things like that.
That's neat.
That is really
cool.
Good. And your wife sees, I guess.
Yes.
Yeah, so she, because they wouldn't want you to be driving the wagon.
No, I can tell you a story about that, too.
Well, yeah. we've got plenty of time. Go ahead. Go for it.
Okay.
We're ready.
So as we got more into the miniature horses, of course, now you've got the one for the pet, and you've got one for driving, and now you're having babies, and now you think, well, gee, I guess we could go to a horse show. Well, now you're going to get a horse trailer. And, of course, in the meantime, you've got to get a barn and a tractor, because I should say our count right now is we have 15.
horses?
15 miniature horses.
Wow. Right now. Wow. Good heavens.
Right, 4 acres.
As of right now. Yeah. So we're going to go to shows, and because by showing your horse, then people get to see you. Time you get 2, 3, 4, 6, 8, 10, 12 of them, maybe you ought to sell some. So we get a trainer, and the trainer is absolutely, and keep in mind I'm a retired teacher, she is absolutely going to be sure that everybody that works with her, they know all about the horses and they work with the horses. And just because I'm blind doesn't mean I'm sitting over there in that chair in the corner.
Yeah,
that's right.
That's the way it ought to be.
Now, the problem with this particular trainer is that she's dyslexic, which means right is not necessarily right and left is not necessarily left.
Yeah.
So I'm in the cart, and we're going around the arena, and I'm doing just fine. I'm not afraid of falling out or anything like that. I have total confidence in these horses. And so I'm going along, and she says, okay, right, right. Well, what she meant to say was left.
Yeah. And so you and ended so you up where?
You get to go in the wall of the arena.
Oh.
The horses stop, you know. And, of course, it's just because it wasn't because of me.
Yeah.
You know, you'd think, well, geez, the blind guy, he ran into the wall.
Yeah, she was walking along beside you or riding with you.
Yeah,
or what?
she was mm-hmm. talking out. Because the arena is, you know, probably 100 foot across or something like that.
Uh-huh.
So she can say, you know, go right, that kind of thing. But it was just, it was really funny because here she was saying right when she should have said left. That
yeah.
kind of thing.
She meant your other left.
Exactly.
Exactly. Yeah. That's what my wife says when I'm carrying something. Left. I mean right. I mean your other left. You know.
There, that's right.
So now you weren't doing this in front of a crowd. You were doing this as just as training exercise.
That was part of the training.
Yeah.
But I have actually participated in the shows also. And in showing the miniature horses, they do basically all the things that big horses do.
Uh-huh.
They will do obstacles where, you know, you take them on this route and they have to go over the bridge and over by the mailbox and do a figure eight and all that kind of stuff. The other showing is you're just showing the horse so that the horse looks pretty. So I would do that. I'd take him in, and then you set the horse up, which means he's got his legs looking like they're not all crooked, and you're doing your formal standing. And then the judges come around, and they're basically looking at the horse for confirmation to see, you know, the head is screwed on straight, and there really is a tail, and
and
kind of thing.
This basically for you is a hobby. I mean, it's not. You breed these to sell, or
we do breed them to sell, and. Since I, you know, again, officially retired from teaching, then now that is what we're doing, is we have stallions, and the horses that we have are all very high-quality horses. We've gone a long ways from the $300 pet horse. We were into, we have one mare that was $6,000.
Wow.
To give you an idea of how expensive they can be.
So you breed.
So we do breed them and sell them, and then, you know, we also do parades and we particularly enjoy it when other people enjoy the horses. So if it's a parade where people are oohing and on and saying, look at the cute horse, you know, that kind of thing, or the little kids, you know, really enjoy seeing them.
Roger, I have a question. you know, a lot of our sporting activities, like you have, instead of regular football anymore, you have arena football. Everything's kind of scaled down. Are they racing these horses on a professional basis yet, or is there talk about it?
Well, I am not there. A few years ago, and I'm not up to date on it, so this would be something to research. But that was talked about, but I haven't been in those circles to know that information yet.
Yeah.
But that is clearly something that could very easily be done because you know, you have the horse in a cart and it's just a matter of you're doing, you know, instead of a harness race with a full-size horse like you'd see in Kentucky, you're just doing it with a miniature horse.
One thing too about your cart, you talked about it being a replica, an Amish replica, talk handyman stuff a lot. Would this be something that you could have built if you'd have wanted to, or have you ever thought about it, or?
Well, the friend of ours that built the cart is, I guess you'd say, in terms of intelligence, he has like spatial intelligence, like at the genius level? Because when we said, hey, Arnie, you know, we'd like to have you build a wagon for us or build a cart for us, I thought it would involve, okay, now we've got to get all these detailed plans and the measurements and stuff like that. And he just basically did it out of his head.
Yeah,
absolutely incredible. But in terms of me being involved in something like that, yeah, absolutely, absolutely could do that. And but again, it relates to: do you have the woodworking skills? Do you have
Do you have the tools?
Yeah, the tools. Now, in our family, my wife is the handyman.
Really,
she's the one with all the tools, and she does North Coast Indian carving and things like that.
Oh, that's neat.
So at the point that we, you know, if we decided that that's something we would want to do, we sure could. And then, again, with help from our good friend Arnie to give us the good guidance. Because, like, for example, and this relates strongly to the handyman feature, I wouldn't have known until he told us the difference in the strength of bolts. We had a friend that was coming out of an arena, and they were doing the showing of the horse and the wagon. He came out of the arena, got to the main door coming out, and the front of his cart just broke right off. And, I mean, he went head first. I mean, it was not nice.
Yeah.
And the reason for it was the strength of the bolts that had been used to make that cart. They had used, I'm going to say cheaper, but you know what I mean, the bolts that weren't strong. And so what Arnie told us, he says, well, I'm using, and he quoted the number of the bolt, which is a much more expensive bolt, but he says, you're not going to have the front of your wagon.
The cart is not going to come off the front of your wagon.
That's right.
I guess they would use a harder,
case-hardened
better
steel.
Case-hardened steel of some sort, rather than these old soft bolts.
That's the other kind of joke about this wagon is that he and I kid about being Norwegian, you know, it's kind of like the Polish jokes or something like that.
Yeah.
Well, he built this thing out of solid oak, and I mean solid oak.
Yeah.
And we live on a bit of a hillside, you know, and I'm saying, man, I don't know, you know, we're saying these horses are strong, but by the time you put my wife and I on this wagon and then try to go up a hillside, and the thing's made out of solid oak.
Yeah, because the wagon's got to be pretty heavy.
Yeah,
solid oak wagon would be pretty darn,
be heavy.
Yeah, it is. It's built for being stout and you know, not falling apart.
But you got two horses pulling it.
Yeah, we got two, and we're thinking now about putting another two on it. Just for
four.
The fun of it. Because in the miniature horses, you can do, you know, two, four, six.
Right.
Yeah, they're small enough. Yeah.
They are small enough, yeah. And it's just a matter of your patience and having enough help to get them all harnessed up.
And another question about your setup there. I know, you know, growing up, and you'd hear people that had ranches or cattle and everything, and that some land would support two cows per acre, some land, you know, a cow every 5 acres. But, like, obviously with your 15 horses, you're having to feed. I wonder if it's not a personal question. Give us an idea of your monthly feed bill.
Well, you are certainly asking the good questions because, again, it's kind of like you get suckered into this. You know, you get one for a pet, and you go, well, that horse, you know, it's a miniature horse. It's not going to eat much. Well, when we first had it, I would take a butter tub of cob, and that's corn, oats, and barley mix, a butter tub, which is like 3-pound tub because we'd get these tubs from Costco.
Uh-huh.
I'd go out and I'd feed this horse. Well, we had a relative stop by one time, and we were showing this horse off, and she says, you're going to kill that horse. I said, what do you mean? That is way too much to be feeding that horse. And, of course, the horse was, you know, good, hefty size. Come to find out, I shouldn't have been feeding it this 3 pounds of grain, which I immediately stopped. What they really get is about a handful. They get about a tuna fish can full of grain, and then they get the equivalent of half a flake of hay. Now, for the non-agricultural people, a bale of hay weighs about 50 pounds. And when you cut the strings on that bale, it can pop apart, kind of like slices of bread.
In layers,
Yeah,
layers. And we call that a flake. And then you give each horse about a half a flake, or if you're in a generous mood, you give them a full flake. And also it depends. If you're having your horse in a parade and doing a lot of stuff, then you do give them more grain or more oats, or you know. But if they're just lounging around the pasture, you know, then they don't get that much. Well, what happens is you get 2, 4, 6, 8, 15 horses, and then all of a sudden you find out that you're contracting the farmer, and for us it'll be the middle of July, and we will get 1,000 bales of hay.
Okay. $2 or $3
a bale?
Excuse
me, I said that wrong. We'll get $1,000 worth of hay. We'll get about 500 bales of hay.
Okay.
And that will last us all year. We're right now with it getting to the middle of May. We're getting, you know, obviously towards the tail end. But in terms, if somebody wanted a miniature horse for a pet, and they truly did only want to have one or two, they really are incredibly cheap to feed because, and again, depending where you are, we were in Alaska one time and a bale of hay was
$20. Yeah. And in the winter, hay would be more if you bought it in December.
Yeah, yeah. But the idea is you build your $15,000 barn and and put your $1,000 worth of hay
in your barn. Well, and so this is something, and you take these and show them, and you breed horses, and this is like everybody in East Texas except us has a few cows.
Oh, okay.
And nobody makes money on their cows. They're write off. They're just they can say I'm in the cattle business, and they got six cows.
Yeah.
And I'm in the cattle business. You knew that, didn't you? You know, but so you've got 15 horses, so you're in the horse business, and it's a great write-off, isn't it?
Hmm? Well, we do use it for taxes because there is so much involved, and frankly, we were a little concerned about that this last year of, what can you do and what can't you do, but the accountant says, no, you're okay because you're doing what you're doing, and it's not like we're selling a lot of horses, but we do manage to sell some, and so that.
Yeah. Are you on the computer? Do you have email?
I do have email. I wish we did have a website. I can give you, if anyone has any questions and would like to contact.
That's what I was thinking. If you had something you could give.
Right. It would be Miniature Horse Teacher, and miniature is some folks have trouble spelling that. It's MINIATURE horse teacher at localaccess.com.
LOCAL access.com.
Right. And just anyone that's interested, I would be glad. And I'm not saying interested as into selling a horse, but if you're just curious and want more information to know about miniature horses, or even if someone would happen to be in the area, we'd be delighted to have you come over and get yourself.
Well, and we did find you, so there might be another blind person into this.
Sure might be.
Well, if you don't mind, Roger, I'm not.
Matter of fact, I did want to be sure and mention, this fall, my wife and I are going to go to Ellsworth, Maine, and we're going to see Dan Shaw, and very close to our Don Shaw here.
Yes,
that's right.
And he lives in Ellsworth, Maine. And he has Cuddles, and I'm sure a lot of people may have heard about Dan and Cuddles,
yes.
Because he uses Cuddles as a guide horse.
We have heard about that.
Yeah.
Well, if you don't mind, Roger, I'm not going to mention this to my wife because she's going to retire here in May, the end of this month, from 32 years as a special education teacher. And she also started out riding rodeo horses and then barrel racing and then went into dressage. And so I'm hoping she will not want to get into the miniature horse business.
Oh, well, would you please tell her for me that anybody that did 32 years of special education deserves every moment of retirement?
Well, she's ready.
And you've got 3 acres out there, Patterson.
Yeah,
plenty of room for one of those horses.
Yeah,
plenty.
That's right.
Well, sir,
a website for Dan Shaw is danandcuddles.com.
Dan and Cuddles. We need to probably get Dan on as a guest, don't we?
We do.
Please.
We need to do that.
Last I heard, he was running for political office in Ellsworth.
Really?
I want to say, like, representative or something like that. And we haven't met him yet. And the other thing is I've never been to New England, so this is going to be a double nice thing.
Now, what time of year are you going?
Well, we're going to go in the fall so we can take advantage of the change of the leaves.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. Yeah, your wife gets to see all the leaves change. We're going to do the same thing. We're going to New York and rent a car and drive up to Boston and up to New England.
Oh, very good.
Next fall.
Yeah, well, we were trying to figure out exactly you know, which way to go in terms of where to fly to, because we love to fly on Southwest because they give us the best deal as far as flying coast to coast.
We're just going to fly into New York. Have you been to New York?
Yeah, yeah.
It's a wonder. I think it would be a wonderful town if you're blind to live in.
Yeah.
Because everything's right there.
Transportation.
Oh, man, there's a little grocery store right on the corner and plenty
right.
of transport. I think it'd be a wonderful blind person. That's another subject. You are doing something that is kind of an unusual thing for blind people, and maybe we'll drum up somebody else doing it. Who knows?
Yeah, that's right.
And we want to thank you and wish you lots of luck, and we'll get a hold of Dan and have him on as a guest.
Well, thank you so much. It's been an absolute pleasure talking to you, gentlemen.
All right, so we'll be back with more of our Blind Handyman Show in just a second.
On streaming audio at the For the People website. From Houston's Taping for the Blind on the Houston Radio Reading Service. From the In Touch Radio Reading Service and on radio reading services all across the nation. And, of course, at acdradio.org. If your radio reading service is not airing Blind Like Me and the Blind Handyman, let them know both shows are available free of charge. Contact us at blindlikeme@txucom.net or call 936-634-9500. That's the Blind Handyman and Blind Like Me at new times in new places. Help us spread the word to blind people all around the world. Blind Like Me and the Blind Handyman. Available free to qualified blind people and their sight-dependent friends.
Well, the whole point of the Blind Handyman Show is blind people have as many plumbing problems and household repairs to do as sighted people do, but we can't do them exactly the same way sighted people do, so we need some input from other blind people to find out how they do household repairs, and so we started this Blind Handyman, and we got a list going. And as far as Blind Like Me is concerned, we want to use it as an educational tool. As I remember being a young adult, a young person, and thinking, well, how am I going to? I want a nice house and kids and a good job, but how am I going to do that? And I had just had no idea. And I think the Blind Like Me show demonstrates the fact that it can be done even if you are blind. That's not a handicap. It can be done.
If you would like to be a guest on either show, or you can suggest someone as a guest, email us at blindhandyman@hotmail.com or blindlikeme@txucom.net.
Well, so far, it's been a labor of love.
Listening to The Blind Handyman, the talk of the blind community. Our email address is blindhandyman@hotmail.com. If you would like to be a part of the show, leave us a phone number and we will contact you soon. Now here's more of today's show with Phil Parr.
Oh, that would be me, wouldn't it? Wonder why Jan's only on one side there, Tommy.
She'd
tell you whatever you wanted to hear. Only kidding,
she's political.
We love Jan. She was on my right some reason.
But after we finish mixing this show down for the internet,
she'll be right in the middle.
Right. Yes, right in there.
That's the way they always do. After they get elected, they come right to.
Well, you have to be in the center, like Bill Clinton, of course, was. You have to be in the center. Centrist politician, Bill. I didn't really like Monica. She just came in my office and.
Yeah.
Like her. You know, Rush Limbaugh said those pictures look like something someone would do on a stage. Look like something, that some actress would do on a stage. Those pictures of mistreating Iraqi prisoners. This story wouldn't even be a big story if it wasn't an election year. It's all right. Just kill them. What the hell? They're just Iraqis. What do we care? Anyway.
Well.
I thought you had a question. Today's question. Here's Don Shaw.
Yeah. Changing the old subject here.
And God knows we needed to, didn't we?
From all that to playing a little music.
All right, playing
brings
a little music.
Up today's subject.
Today's subject, all right.
A little handy person around the house project here.
All right.
If you happen to have this old acoustical guitar laying around the house that you decide to pick up and tune up a little bit, and it's so old, been around so long, that you happen to break a string on this guitar, right?
Yeah. Yep.
Well, my question is, and I haven't really looked into this much yet at all, but I know you've fooled around with music for your whole life. I basically want to replace the string on the guitar, and I know that basically you attach it, bring it over the bridge, and bring it up the neck, and wind it around the little, whatever you call
the, the peg
at the
there.
End. The peg at the end.
The winder, little key at the end.
Basically, the question is, just on putting on a string, how do you attach it to the body of the guitar on the bridge end?
I'll tell you how to do that, but we really probably ought to just buy a set of strings and put a new set of strings on that guitar.
Yeah, you will not save any money trying to solder that old string together.
Well, no. I have a new string. I have a new string as
we speak. I know that you're going to prone.
You bought a new string?
Well, there's some new strings with the guitar. So
and
I have
so
a string to replace.
You have a string to replace.
Yeah.
Do you have a whole set?
Yeah, I do. Actually, I have
a whole
set.
Let's just put the whole set on. You bring it next week. But I'll tell you how to do it. But if you'll bring it next week while we're sitting in there shooting the breeze after the show, I'll put a set of strings on that guitar.
So it's not something that takes like a long time?
No. I got to where,
to do.
When I was working the worst house, playing every night, your strings get old and you got to change them. So I could put a set of strings on in about 9 minutes.
Yeah,
take them off
good.
And put them on.
Or about 30
and
years old or so.
But you got a key winder. I had a key winder, which they say is hard on keys. Either one of two things. It either threads through the bridge, and of course the string has a little eye on the end of it that won't let it go completely through. It either threads through the bridge or it has a peg. You put it down in a hole and you put a peg in this hole and that holds it. And then you bring it up, and I always cut the end of them. I never use the whole string. I always take them up about 4 or 5 inches past the winder, past the key, and cut them off, and then thread them through the key and tighten them up, and bingo, there you are.
So some strings, you're saying, then have a peg that hold it on, I'll hold the end onto the body of the guitar?
Hold the end down in a hole. You put the string down in a hole, and then you put the peg down in the hole with the string.
Which glues in? This peg glues in?
No, sir. It just sticks in. It just fits in.
Like you're caning a chair.
Exactly. So it's just like you're caning a chair.
Okay. Like
the same thing.
Peg.
And it's a peg with a little head on it that you can pull out with a little pair of needle-nose pliers, or usually with just your fingers when you loosen the string.
Okay.
Has a little notch in one side where the string goes, and it holds the string in there. I think that one of yours, you'd probably thread them through the bridge. But if you'll bring those strings next week, while we're sitting in there talking, I'll slap a set of strings on that little guitar.
Okay.
By the way,
if
you ever decide to get rid of that guitar and she wants an electric, I got an electric, I'll trade you for it.
Okay.
Luann likes the top on that guitar. She liked the way it looked.
All right. Might think about that. In her case,
Andrew's going to want an electric guitar.
With a child playing it. Yeah, that's she would. So
well, I got one I'll swap.
That might be a deal.
And speaking of chair caning, Mr. Shaw, are you on your ones, twos, threes, or have you completed
this? Have you started on that chair yet?
In fact, I am fixing to cut the seat out of that chair this week. The old cane out this week. And it, the customer that has this chair wants to save this cane out of the center.
Okay.
But she's going to do something with it at some point. So probably, who knows, frame it. I don't know what. Anyway, I'm going to save the center section.
What would she do with that cane?
Probably make a shadow box. I don't know if this is an old chair.
Her mother, I think, was the one that caned this chair, actually. And there's no telling how long ago that's been. And I think wants to save the cane out of it.
Was it pretty raggedy, or are you going to be able to save
it? Around the edges, I can save the whole middle.
Well, that'll be good.
Because the part that's ripped is on one side, luckily. So
you're just going to snip along, and it'll be saved as a sheet then?
I can save the whole middle section anyway
as one sheet.
So
what a
she
deal.
Can cut it to whatever shape at that point she wants.
Then you've got to go through and clean out all the holes, don't you?
Go through and clean out the holes.
It's going to be a pretty big job. Well, listen, do the blind sights before you start on this lady's chair. She doesn't care.
No, I will. It's time to do
those.
It's time to get a few
blind sights. I didn't even use one this week. I just told them about about our little email addresses.
You mean Mr. Shaw has fallen behind?
He has fallen behind. We weren't
going to. You don't think he's going to quit you, too?
I'm getting into the Don Patterson.
You know what he said when he first came in? He said,
Mark.
He said, Phil, I don't want to sound like Don Patterson, but I haven't had time to do that.
That's right.
You don't think that Mark Christie could probably inherit
both of those?
Oh, he might could at this time.
I'm having a hard enough time getting him to do those damn other things.
Boy, that's two jobs.
I mean, you just can't depend on anyone.
You can't depend on anyone.
Yeah,
you're the guy that could do both of these.
If I ask him to do them, he'd do them. There'd be no question about it, would you?
Oh, boy.
I'm not going to ask you, but I might have to. Haggard said, I can stand it, but I can't hardly. If you'll do those for me, I'll certainly appreciate it. Folks love you out there. They listen to these. Ken Sawicki called me this week and said that he suggested some blind site that you... And I sent that to you, didn't I?
Yeah, that was a good guest.
Yeah.
Kenneth Sawicki?
Ken Sawicki. He's a good guest. He's done all kinds of things.
Yeah.
He does the same job at the college that you do out
sure
in California.
Does. Same kind of deal.
All right, we stumbled through another one. This is number 49, right? No, 79.
79.
Will be 80 shows next year. 80 shows next year.
Next week we'll be on
another beer and hope for the big.
And Don Shaw's phone number is?
No more chairs to Kane.
3187 is what it is. I got it. All right. Thank you, gentlemen. Donald Shaw,
yes.
Donald Patterson.
Yep.
Enjoy.
Thank you, guys. And we'll see you next week. Tom Houston will be back next week, won't you?
Yes, sir.
We need your help, all we can get. And I'm Phil Parr. I see, said the blind man, as he picked up his hammer and saw.
The Blind Handyman is produced by Out of Market Productions, 1604 Southwood Drive, Lufkin, Texas. Phone 936-634-9500.